Hey, I tell you, boys and girls, feeling good today. I went to grab my headphones, slid them on like I'm some kind of Batman. I mean, superhero with the headphones. I mean, good God, I gotta tell you, I was impressive. So, Robert, you keep left this look. Ah, this is Fish and Frank back in the chair, and we're going to talk about this area this time. And Captain Morris Campbell in the guest seat, Robert in the chair across from me. Of course, I have no idea where we're going to go with this. So what I'm going to do is just say, Robert and Morris Campbell are joining me. And so, yes, it's a good day to be alive and living in downtown Charlotte Harbor. From our luxurious studios right here off the curb in Edgewater. You know, eventually, I mean, I get to move up to the sidewalk. So, all right, there we go. Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
What are we doing? Where are we going today? Lead, I shall follow.
I was thinking that because of all the pelagic fish that we have relatively near shore this time of year, and since grouper does kind of, it's kind of crappy compared to normal years, we could pick Morris's brain because he is so diverse with that offshore fishing that maybe he could share some insight for some of our anglers out there on maybe chumming up dolphin or trolling for dolphin or maybe some rigs that might be
okay. Well,
use.
Let's start off with what kind of fish are out there in the Gulf and how far. Let's say if you're going to go 3 to 15 miles out, because we have reefs like Novak, Tremblay, they're within that 3 mile mark, M16 and all that. From 3 to 10, what kind of fish could we possibly think about finding there?
This time of year, you could find blackfin tuna on those. You'll have some king mackerel. The king mackerel that are going to be on those are going to be extremely large king mackerel this time of year. Big spawning females that don't really ever leave our area. And an occasional sailfish. You know, most of these fish are going to be hanging around bait schools, schools of thread herrings and Spanish sardines. Along with those schools that you'll see on top of the water, you'll also have big schools of cigar minnows underneath them and blue runners as well, which are all premium baits for them.
Okay, now what I'm going to ask is, if you're going to, you're talking about going trolling for them or anchoring up in fish, or what
you could do either or. You could, you know, since most people tend to want to bottom fish in this area, something a lot of people are having success with is just catching some of those live baits and putting them on a balloon rig with a little wire leader on them and, you know, sending them out behind the boat and letting them swim around over the reef area while you're fishing for your grouper and snapper.
So how big a bait are we talking about? 2 inches, 6 inches?
It could be any of the above. I mean, if you're just putting a little white bait out that's 2 or 3 inches, you could put that out. Normally what we're going to do is take like a 5 to 6 inch thread herring or a big Spanish sardine, a blue runner, same size range, cigar minnow, and put on that hook and put out.
So how far below the float would you have that bait?
Yeah, I don't put them very deep behind it. Most of the time I'll put, you know, 4 to 5 feet out. Most of these fish are sight feeders anyway, and, you know, you don't really need your bait swimming a long way. The more line you got out, the more tendency you have to tangle up as well.
Okay, so I'm going to put my float up 4 or 5 feet, throw it over the side of the boat, let the current take it away from the boat, unless you've got a long rod where you can actually cast something like that. But at 4 or 5 feet, my baits are dragging in the water. So
right.
I usually just tend to throw them over, leave the bail open, and just let it drift away from the boat while I'm anchored up.
Right.
Until it gets to wherever I want it. Now, so that's like, say, 3 to 10, 3 to 15. What would be the next level, 15 out to what, 30?
That's going to
I would say so.
Yeah, yeah. And that's going to stay pretty uniform until you start to hit the edge of the blue water this year. If you're going offshore this time of year, you're going to notice that you'll go out to about, oh, probably 55, almost 60 feet, and the water will be blue-green. And then after that, you'll have a light blue water and a definite color change there. That color change is also an area to pay attention to. In the past years, I've caught mahi and sail and all kinds of things on that little color change.
So really, it's not like how many miles you go out. It's once you get out in that 3 mile mark where the reefs kind of start, you can continue, the fishing is going to remain kind of what we just talked about all the way out until you see the change in color, which would start in your thinking maybe 60 feet of water out there.
It is right now, and that's just where it goes from green water to, you know, light blue water. It's still not the blue water that, you know, we would target, you know, the tuna, wahoo, dolphin and pelagics in mainly, but that's at usually this time of year you'll get into that around 90 to 100 feet of water.
So we've got a definite color change right now happening around 60 feet. Then you get out there to 90 to 100 feet of water, and you're going to find another color change.
The water's not going to have a sharp color change on it. What you're going to have is the water will just start to turn darker blue. And usually by that 120, 90 to 120 area, it'll be darker blue. I mean, it won't be as dark as if you were out in the loop current, but...
Right. Yeah, that was fairly scary. Trying to tell people, hurrying is not the best thing when you're doing work. Moving steady and sure is. All right. Anyway, so is it, what kind of, let's drop into the first color water from land out to that 60 foot mark. Are there any lures that would be really good for trolling in that area? Anything you can recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. I really like the X-Rap. The X-Rap 30 colors, you know, chartreuse, blues, golds.
All right, here's one question I need you to answer. Have I prompted you in any way about what to say?
Absolutely, but I'm going to say it anyway.
But I've not like held up little names of this brand or
no,
that brand.
No, I couldn't read them at that distance anyway.
Okay, just so people know at home, the one thing I promise you I will never do is tell somebody else what to say. When they come on, this is, as you have to understand, is completely unscripted. I ask questions, they answer, that's their choices. I've done so much with Rapala lately because I'm so proud to be a Rapala dealer, because they're made in Finland, they pay good wages, it's a very cool company who makes an excellent product at a reasonable price. So I just want people to know, I don't ask for this thing. This is a brand that you use.
Oh, if you come on board my boats, you're going to find these X-Wraps. I mean, we use them, we've caught everything from sailfish to wahoo, tuna, dolphin, groupers. You know, we've caught, you know, rooster fish on them. I mean, we've caught everything imaginable on them. They're a really good trolling lure, and it doesn't take a whole lot of skill to put one out and run around at 5 or 6 mile an hour.
Alright. Robert, what you got in this? What are you looking to learn?
Besides the water change and obviously the depth specific, you know, Rapala is a good one, but is there any other like lures that could work very well out there for producing some of these other fish?
Well, you know,
you thought you were going to be able to sleep through this. You thought this was nap time, like you had a break here. Now, come on.
I'm listening.
Snap.
Well, one of the nicest things that, you know, the average guy can just put out behind his boat and pull, and, you know, and I would say do this in addition to an X-Rap. You're covering the deeper waters, and if you're doing that, what you can do is use one of the C&H little rattle jets in purple or chartreuse. They make an excellent lure. They catch just about everything from sailfish to king mackerel.
Sorry, putting in a shrimp order there, so talking in the background. Every
so
day,
yeah,
no matter.
The small skirted baits.
Yeah, the small skirted baits. I just pulled the C&H name out of there because that's one that I use with great success. So,
and
that's what I tend to talk about.
One of our favorite companies to deal with just bought C&H. So it is one of the brands we are going to get back into this
and it
year.
Is going to stay the same, too.
They're going to be exactly the same baits. The only thing that may change is maybe a little bit better price, because this company is very aggressive, very sharp, and they love Southwest Florida. They come here every year. The people who now own C&H, they're here all the time. And so C&H, I think, is going to make an even bigger presence on the west coast of Florida. Thank you for talking about those. Good friends of mine. I like those people.
Well, I've known those guys for years and fished their products, you know, in the Marlin tournaments back in the, you know, 20 years ago when I was doing the blue marlin tournaments and things like that. So I've used their products for that at least 25, 30 years with great success. So it's easy to talk about stuff that works.
That's cool. So anyway, I'm not part of the conversation at this point. Where were you guys?
Just talking about different varieties other than as far as lures to troll and pull along out
and
there.
And don't rule out, you know, a nice rigged ballyhoo this time of year. You can put a teaser skirt in front of it of some sort, a sea witch or anything like that. But you can pull those ballyhoo along and catch quite a few fish on those too. And it's a really nice natural bait. A lot of people shy away from that because they don't have any experience with that sort of bait, but it works really good, and it produces sometimes a lot better than an artificial bait.
Right. Well, and I think another thing too down here is that people kind of avoid it because they don't think it's practical, because they don't think we have a sailfish or tuna or dolphin population that's really feasible to fish for.
Mm-hmm. And I hear people tell me that all the time, and then I start pulling the pictures out.
Yeah, July and August are like the premier months where it's doable for most people in their boats because they do move in closer to shore here.
They do.
Versus the rest of the year, realistically to do it, you have to go out there to that 120 feet plus. Mm-hmm. But this time of year, you hear guys with the sailfish, 3 to 5 miles out on occasion, or a dolphin. I mean, several years ago we had little chicken dolphin in the pass.
Mm-hmm. I've actually caught small 10, 15 inch dolphin at the Boca Grande Sea Buoys on Sabikis before.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's one of those things that I think people should give it a try. And especially when you're going to like a lot of these near shore reefs, some of them are fairly close together, either a 4 or 5 mile stretch from one reef to another or one reef to another ledge. I think guys should more actively try trolling some of these different lures that they usually associate with the Keys or the other coast, and I think they would be so pleasantly surprised with what they might turn up.
And one of the questions that people almost always ask me is, well, where can I go catch grouper and snapper? Can you give me a latitude, longitude? Give me a coordinate so I can go catch grouper and snapper. Well, one of the fringe benefits of trolling is you've got your sonar on and you've got your GPS there. And when you're trolling, you should also watch that, because probably 60 to 80% of the spots that I've found over the course of my career out here fishing in the Gulf of Mexico, I found while I was trolling. And I just reach down and touch mark on my GPS, and I'll go back and check those at the end of the day or another day. And, sometimes one or two of them turn out to be great spots. Sometimes
how hard it was to say, and Mark doesn't mind? Never mind.
Well, if you press mark firmly, he doesn't mind.
Nice.
I'm sorry, I'm sick.
He's over there typing away in his own little world, and he's going to throw that in there.
Well, it's good to see his medicine's working.
All right. All right, anyway, just to kind of round out this little bit of the Area Fishing Report, I'm still hearing some big stories about a lot of nice-sized mangrove snappers from the passes all the way on out. Any kind of confirmation or you're full of it type thing?
No. It's true, because mangrove snapper are actually spawning right now. So you can catch them in the passes. They're spawning aggregates in the passes. They're spawning aggregates up in the harbor, actually. A lot of the major reefs are going to catch them on them, and they'll be nice size this time of year.
Now, this is an actual question. Do you think, I would assume that some of these deeper pockets underneath the mangroves have had some amazing mangrove snapper activity on it. Do you think that they would actually spawn up in some of these pockets under the mangroves like that?
Absolutely.
So that would be a real thing.
As long as there's good tidal flow, they will use an area like that to spawn. They don't necessarily migrate. What I've found is that mangrove snapper tend to stay pretty much in the area that they're spawn in. They, the ones you catch offshore, occasionally you'll catch a 10-inch mangrove out there, and then you'll catch a 10-pound mangrove in the same area. So that leads me to believe that, they didn't migrate into this spot that you know, their spawn there, and they live their life cycle.
Once they
out.
Find it, they decide they're going to move in, they'll stay there, mm-hmm. you know. because I've wondered, because I've had a lot of stories about people catching nice mangrove snappers right up against the mangroves right now, and it's mostly wherever you have a heavy mangrove leaf cover, a lot of green leaves, big shady area, but with a little bit of a trough right under the mangroves themselves, a little deep water under the mangroves, not necessarily where the land comes out at a very sloping thing, but more where you have a drop off and then maybe coming back up shallower on the flats.
Yes, we've caught, for instance, in the Ponce area, we've caught some really big mangrove snappers in there over the last few years. This time of year, using the smaller white bait and shrimp, even some cut thread herrings will work for you. But mostly the little white baits really get them going.
It's amazing how predatory they are. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. If somebody comes in, they say, I want to catch mangrove snappers, and they've got a bag of frozen shrimp, I said, you might want a bag of either the thread fins or the pilchards or whatever, because I think they like that shiny aspect to the outside of the bait. And I use a scissors and chop them into nicer pieces, because I found the more you tear through them, unless your knife is very, very sharp, the scissors is a better object. I want that nice, bright, shiny little piece of sardine or thread fin or pilchard or whatever it is. It's fishing for the mangrove snapper. Mm-hmm. I've done better with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that continues offshore. I mean, when you start to get offshore, you know, they will still bite the pilchards and cut bait and everything. They will feed on that. But when you start to get offshore a little bit, then shrimp really come into
play. I was
going
to say, to me, it's an opposite thing when I get out in the Gulf. I want a live shrimp, 3 inches long, give or take, a little bit less, a little bit more. Nothing too massive, but a nice shrimp drop down there. That seems to be snapper candy.
Well, they're used to feeding on those shrimp out there. I mean, that's one of their preferred forages, and that's what they use.
The mouse shrimp, pistol shrimp, to me, is the best bait I've ever seen. I mean, if you have an aquarium with... I had a teacher's permit, because I used to just do a lot of stuff going to schools and teaching kids about the environment and fish and all that. And going to Europe, spending so many years working in Europe, I quit doing it. But back then I had a small snook, small tarpon, all these fish in aquariums, and people would come and we would go over all of them when I had my permits to legally keep all that. And if you had a mouse shrimp, pistol shrimp, whatever you call them, putting it in the aquarium, there was a one chance in 20 he could make it to the bottom before something ate him.
Mm-hmm.
They're amazingly good bait.
Oh, they are.
You just can't get them. I mean,
yeah.
Catch. If we get 8,000 shrimp, and I would say out of 40,000 shrimp, there'll be one mouse shrimp, pistol shrimp in there.
Yeah, not very many.
So it's not like you can come in, boys and girls, and say, hey, I want those shrimp you were talking about. Literally, it's one out of 20, 30, 40,000 shrimp that we might get.
Yeah, they're not an open water swimmer. They pretty much are very much structure oriented.
They like dig holes and get under rocks and stuff like that. You know, you got to turn over a rock.
You occasionally catch one. The shrimpers occasionally catch one because either they pulled up a rock that they snagged out there, or they found that one oddball that was moving from one spot to another because somebody chased them out.
There you go. All right. So anyway, bottom fishing pretty good in the Gulf of Mexico. Just kind of a wrap of that. Trolling's doing really good. Is there anything else somebody could be targeting out there in the Gulf?
Well, right.
No is as good an answer as yes.
No, that's not true, because you know you have amberjack, which just opened up in state waters. It'll be closed.
Okay, what are the odds? Here I'm not, and this is not directed to you. This is a real legitimate question, because yes, amberjack is open. On the west coast of Florida, it has to be within 9 miles of the shoreline. On the east coast of Florida, you have to be within 3 miles of the shoreline. West coast of Florida, odds of catching an amberjack within 9 miles, Morris?
Legal size.
Average
angler, not you.
On public knowledge areas, slim, but
let's
there
say
are some
I
good
haven't
spots.
Been out there in a while because I have that Meniere's mm-hmm. ear disease, so I have not been in the Gulf. If I was to go out there just going cold, what were my odds? 1 in 100? 1 in 1,000?
Maybe 1 in 100.
Maybe. Okay, you're giving me the benefit of the doubt with the whole fishing.
Well, you are fishing, Frank.
Yeah, okay. So now on the west coast, on the east coast of Florida, say Daytona, Fort Lauderdale, Miami. What are your odds over there?
Well, big difference there, because 9 miles out here, you're going to be in about 50 feet, 55 feet of water. If you go 3 miles off of Palm Beach, you're in, you know, 150 to 200 feet of water.
I would say easy, yeah.
Yeah.
So what's your odds on the East Coast? Pretty good. I mean, 50-50?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The most of their amberjack fishing is actually done inside of 3 miles.
So we're talking better than 50-50. You've got a 60-70% chance.
Then you open up that can of worms about the people that are actually protecting all of these fish in the Gulf of Mexico, like the rare and endangered trigger fish, which are closed to harvest, and the rare and endangered red snappers, and the rare and endangered gag groupers. And if you'll recall back a couple years ago, we had the rare and endangered red grouper, which was so overfished that we were in danger of losing them. And damaging the stock. Now, 2 years later, there are plenty of red grouper all of a sudden, and they've released the red grouper to be harvested again. So, you know, the whole point of that is a red grouper takes a lot longer than 2 years to replenish and rebuild. I mean, a two-year-old red grouper is about 10 inches long.
I was going to say, it's not even close to being sexually mature.
No. In a 20-inch keeper size is probably a 4 to 5 year old fish.
Now, I have actually, you can't prove it, but our congressmen and senators get paid better by our lobbyists, mm-hmm. the commercial fishing lobbying groups. I mean, they get better fishing trips, they get better tours, they get better hotels. I mean, the lobbyists in the commercial industry pay the politicians better than the recreational industry does.
Could that possibly be one of the reasons that the commercial boats can harvest red snapper and gag grouper during the closed season at will?
No, really, would our professional politicians who are, I mean, we have people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
There's a pillar of the community.
You know, she has proven she is not biased one way or another. No. This woman is directly up the middle, would not take a stand between one group and another.
That's
group.
Right. She just didn't feel the burn.
Well, but she's proven to be right up the middle, and I'm sure the rest of our politicians are too. You know, I don't have any doubt in that. So they wouldn't benefit the commercial fishermen over the recreational fishermen. We'll just go and say no, they won't do that.
No
proof.
All these highly endangered fish need to be protected.
Right. Then there's no proof of anything else, so we'll just call it they're not doing it. Getting back in, let's get out of the Gulf of Mexico, and we're going to come back into the harbor, the nice, safe, warm, fuzzy harbor, away from our politicians and stuff. So what are we looking at up in the harbor right now?
Me? No.
Come on, Robert.
Go from one to the other.
Got some tarpon that are scattered up in there. Quite a few tarpon to be caught.
Yeah, the juvenile
the thing is,
tarpon.
I've been hearing about this all morning from all the different people. How many sharks are out there? The black drum that are still up around 41.
PGI and Port Charlotte canals.
PGI, 41 canals, right. Now you're getting it. Come on, Robert. We got you fired up. Go, Robert, go.
A lot of juvenile tarpon up in the canal systems, both PGI and Port Charlotte. And then there's been a lot of fish in the morning at the bridges, 75 and 41. Even Eldra Bean lately has been really good on the juvenile tarpon. Where the big tarpon have gone is kind of beyond me. I'm not hearing of great reports of the adult tarpon anywhere in the harbor. And
right up until the last day or two.
Yeah,
the last day or two. Things are starting to come around. We got new tarpon.
Well, we're just coming off of the full moon, so that's been real screwy because it's been
you're getting a lot of tarpon that are coming in from the deep waters of the Gulf of Mexico where they've spawned, and they're trickling their way back into the harbor, and they'll really populate this area in the coming weeks.
Yeah,
September, October, my two favorite months to fish for tarpon.
Yeah, definitely.
There's almost nobody here. Except the locals and a few, and most of them don't do it at that time of year. They wait for May, June to go out and do it with everybody else. I'm not sure it's a spawn issue that takes them out at this time. I'm not sure what it is. I've often given it the thought that because we have a break in between them, because when we come off that May, June, and then we get into July, and we do have a slump in the tarpon fishing, major slump, and then it comes back kind of with a vengeance. I think, I hate to put a Disney spin to this, you know, like the Pixar spin to it. It's they make these wonderful animated movies about fish. I'm just kind of wondering if they do go out there to big groups and go, okay guys, well, we'll see you next year. I'm gonna go back and hang with the kids for a while, you know, and see what's going on here. You guys go to Texas, all right, well, we'll see you. Oh, you're going to the Keys, you're going to Mexico. I wonder how they decide who's coming back into the harbor, who goes to Louisiana, who goes to Mexico, who goes to the Keys. It's a very strange thing, and I almost picture this large grouping of fish out there, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, like throwing a rock in the middle of them. Some come back up in the harbor, some head out to the other parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'll agree with that, you know, because it does happen kind of in that cycle every year, you know. But when the full moon always happens this time of year, it's always funky when you've got the clear skies at night.
Maybe it's just a food issue where so many of them go out to feed deep, maybe take advantage of those cooler, clearer Gulf waters. And it could be a comfort issue. I mean, they
could
may not
be the afternoon thunderstorms with all the lightning and thunder, because that usually bothers them in the springtime and gets them to boogie offshore. But
and we were having a lot of thunderstorms. Maybe they just went out to deep water until the time when the storms pass a little more.
That's true.
A lot of different theories here.
Yeah, I'm not trying to throw a cartoon spin on anything. I'm just literally don't know why, but after 32 years, this question finally posted itself in my head, you know, and just kind of, any thoughts on it, Morris? Why would July be such a slump? And then all of a sudden, boom, they're back.
Well, traditionally in July, I'm fishing most of the time well offshore. By well offshore, I mean past 70 miles. Sometimes we're at 90 to, you know, over 100 miles at times. We're trolling out there for pelagics, and almost every trip we'll encounter at least one, maybe two or three on some trips, enormous schools, by enormous I mean acres, of large tarpon out there spawning. They're in the blue water. They spawn where there are weed lines, because their larvae hide in the weed lines until they drift back in or make their way back in. But many times they fool me. I'll be up on the helm, we're trolling, and I look and I see fish splashing, big fish splashing up ahead, and I get excited, okay, we got tunas or something working up here on the surface. And when we get up, there are literally acres of adult tarpon spawning. The males will be milting, and the females, and you know, they'll actually milk the water up with their spawning activities. They will not bite. They are not interested in biting during this time. That's why they feed up so heavily in that May-June period in the passes on the crabs and everything. And once they accomplish that, that's when, like you were saying, the fish, I think they're genetically predisposed to where they're going to return to, kind of like a salmon does, or a sea run trout or something like that. I think those tarpon tend to return to the areas where they were spawned or went as a juvenile,
where they grew up.
Yeah, I just think that's my theory on it. But it's the spawning thing is not really a theory, because I've seen it for the last 30 years.
Well, I have watched tarpon in later in tarpon season during years where it was really a drought year, and there was no fresh water in the harbor. I mean, it just hadn't rained for weeks and months, and the rivers weren't flowing and everything. I've seen them spawn right in the middle of the harbor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've
witnessed in the holes out there. And I mean, and the scientists all say that's ridiculous, they don't do that. I'm like, are you kidding? How do they know the difference between the Gulf and the harbor on a drought year? It's just salt water. They're looking for salinity to do this. Now, I was absolutely unaware, and I am going to literally cut that clip of what you just did out to use in some of my tarpon stuff. It was exceptionally interesting. I didn't realize there was a secondary spawn in July out deep. Because I know they have little spawns in June, and I don't really think they're doing any spawning in May anymore. Maybe a little bit.
I think that's too early for them.
I think, you know, I know we get some of those pushes where they head offshore, they get a little bit of spawning. You know, I mean, it could be like a prom, you know. I mean, some leave at 9 o'clock at night, others wait till everything's over, you know. I mean, I don't know.
It looks like a class reunion out there, because literally, I can't imagine how many tarpon are in it, because we've seen two, three acres of tarpon out there just literally on the surface in one big spawning aggregate.
Right.
And then find multiple areas of that during the course of the day. So that's just the areas that I'm encountering in my fishing during that day, and who knows what else is out there at that
right.
time.
I mean, it's crazy. So yeah. Anyway, that was really cool. So tarpon are coming back up into the harbor. That yep. was the point of that whole thing, in case you guys got lost, because I did. And I found my way back all by myself.
You did.
Breadcrumbs work. Oh, Gretel, breadcrumbs work. Okay, anyway, coming back to that, snook doing real good on the east side. Caught talk to Captain Tom Fisher. He's having a great day snook fishing on what we assume is the east side. And
yeah.
have you been doing anything out Bull Bay, Turtle Bay anywhere?
The Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, there's a few fish in there. There are a few post-spawn fish that are returning back in that area, especially on the outside bars. But there's still a whole lot of fish around the pass islands, the ones that are closest to the pass. And a lot of fish still in the pass, still spawning. And then there's a lot of fish up and down the beach, and those fish will kind of hang out in that area, a lot of them, until October.
You're still seeing a lot of snook out there.
A lot of big fish.
Was there a lull in it for a little while where you didn't see a lot of snook going around? Because we had very, very few, if any, snook reports, except right in the past. And then all of a sudden, now I'm starting to hear more about them. I'm back on the beaches, back around, more so than like just in the past.
Mm-hmm. And that's their spawning cycle. I mean, when they pile into the passes to spawn, you know, they really pile in there. I mean, stump pass at times has so many snook in there that you can't even see the bottom. I mean, it's just that many fish spawning at one time.
I remember those days back when I was charting, going over there, and it was actually... when I was doing charters and I needed to expand my area up to there, it was Captain Morris who took me out in his boat and showed me all the different areas and the fishing up there. That's who originally taught me the Lemon Bay Stump Pass area, was on Captain Morris's boat. And then I had to go out and experiment for myself. But you were the first one to take me around that area. And looking back the other way, anybody hear any stories of trout in the harbor?
A few, but most of them are being caught out in a little bit deeper water, but you'll catch them today in 6 feet of water and then tomorrow in 4 feet of water.
Gotcha.
They're just kind of hopscotched.
I'm still getting a lot of reports on sharks, from bull sharks up by 75, 41, out in the holes. Anybody hearing sharp nose, black tips?
Sharp nose and black tips have been out there in the lower hole in the Pirate Harbor hole.
So and basically more towards the Gulf.
Yeah,
you got to get down in the straits,
a little
out
higher
across
salinity.
Cape. Yeah, more a little more salt water.
It's a salinity thing, because once you get out past Bull Bay and closer to the Boca Grande area and Placida Harbor, there are a lot of sharks in there.
Is the water clearing up out there? I haven't been out there in a while.
The water's real clear, and then when you get the outgoing tide, you get some brown water that washes out. But when the Gulf actually floods in on the incoming tides, it's really clear, and it keeps the salinity high.
I'm hearing more and more stories of clear water on the east side and out by the reef and stuff like that. There's gag grouper on the reef, from what I understand. There's a lot of sharks out on the Alligator Creek Reef.
Let's go back to that shark thing for a minute, because okay. The coolest thing is this time of year, and you'll remember this. What was the number one shark that was always caught in our August shark tournament that was always brought in?
I would say lemons.
You got it.
Lemons
are the predominant shark out there right now. The guys are catching 6 to 8 foot lemons everywhere out there right now.
I saw a lot of lemons in the shallow water.
The guys down in, you know, down in Pine Island are getting some real nice ones all along the east side, Pirate Harbor holes. I mean, there's literally
lemon
that is
sharks.
The predominant big shark here right now.
You're not allowed to keep them, boys.
No.
You can catch and release them, but you can't keep them. The only way you can tell the difference between a lemon and a bull shark...
It's yellow?
Yes.
The seeds, right?
Okay. Yeah, when you cut them open, look for the seeds in the lemon shark.
The secondary dorsal fin.
Okay. I had to
People always say, you know, the lemon shark's yellow. No. I've heard it in here from some of our guys. No, lemon shark is not yellow. Color has nothing to do with the name. You know, it's that secondary dorsal fin.
You're out looking for sharks.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting a boat.
Mm-hmm.
You're heading out in there. You hook a shark. You bring in the shark. You get him up to the boat. How do you know what this shark is? Is it a bull or a lemon shark?
We're going to need a bigger boat.
That was good. Nice. I'm looking at the secondary dorsal fin, the one between his primary dorsal fin and his tail. That secondary dorsal fin is almost the same size as his primary.
It looks like he has two dorsal fins.
Yeah.
That's a lemon shark. Easiest way to tell, boys and girls, stay out of jail. Don't get in trouble with the law. 100% behind our law enforcement officers.
Right.
Proud to have a gazillion and ten law enforcement police officers. We actually have off-duty FWC comes in here. Tons of officers of every description from the Secret Service on down. And we stand proudly with them and behind them. And if they ever asked, I'd stand in front of them. So,
yep.
Anyway, just to throw that in, yes, I'm becoming riotously political on that.
Wow.
Anybody,
their lives matter too.
Anybody, our Charlotte County Police Force is some of the finest people I've ever had the pleasure to run into. And I've told every one of them, anybody gets, you know, you need somebody to get between you and some stupid protester, you call me, I'll close the store down, I'll come there, I'll stand right between you, my arms folded.
All you got to do, Frank, is hand them a job application. They'll run like crazy.
Nice. I like it. That's awesome.
There's nothing going to scare more than handing out job applications.
That's
all right,
perfect.
On that note.
On that note.
Right, I'm just very pro police force. I like our officers. And this is coming from a guy who just a few months ago got a $220 speeding ticket. I still like him. Okay. Actually, it was about a year ago. It's when I found out I had to have radiation treatments in my brain. He didn't think that was a reason for being a little upset when I drove. But it was a good thing. He slowed me down. I lived through the night, so we'll call it a good thing. Anyway, Fish and Frank here in the chair. Robert in the chair across from me. We're kind of pushing the limits of good taste, boundaries, and everything else. It's time to play the music. Get the producer in here. All right, here we go. Fish and Frank, radio fishing, political and otherwise. Sorry, boys and girls, but some things got to be said. Protect our police. And this is Fish and Frank in the chair. This is Robert in the chair across from me. And our good friend and bandmate, Captain Morris Campbell, one of the best guitar players I've ever had the privilege to stand next to and play bass. Say goodbye, Captain Morris Campbell.
Goodbye, Captain Morris Campbell.
Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
Okay. Thank you, boys and girls, for listening. We'll see all you guys later. Bye-bye.